My name's Dave, and I am an alcoholic. The short form of my drinking history, I drank too much, too often, for too long. I don't know if anybody else did that or not, but if you did, you're in the right place. I wrote down last night the unity theme from the 1970 International. And this we owe to AA's future, to place our common welfare first, to keep our fellowship united, for on AA unity depends our lives and the lives of those to come. We all seem to know the responsibility theme from, I think it was Toronto, but this one sort of gets passed by sometimes. You know, unity is sort of a unique feature for AA. A lot of organizations don't talk about unity. We have to, because it's what keeps us alive. You know, it's what cements us together. If you go back to the 12 by 12, I don't know, I think unity's in there 15 or 20 times or so. It was a big deal for Bill. You know, this is a unique organization. We have our traditions, but they're all positive. Our steps are positive. We don't have any don'ts. We don't have any of these thou shalt nots. Then we get here and you hear people say there are no musts in this program, and then you get reading the big book, and Bill seems to have this problem of putting a lot of musts in there. One tape I heard one time said that they had the big argument over Chapter 5 and they wanted to make the changes to it, and Bill wasn't too happy with that, but he finally agreed, but he says, I get the right to the rest of the big book. So as soon as Chapter 5's over with all the suggested program, boom, he drove the must back in there. You know, this is a precious program. I heard a deal on the news in the last couple weeks that they decided there's 22 million alcoholics in the United States. So each of us got to go out and find 20. I'll get on one of my little pet peeves. We hear, you know, about the wonderful success rate they had in early AA. But they didn't start counting somebody until they'd had, for most of the places, they had to go to classes before they even told them where the meetings were. So they basically had read the big book, worked all 12 steps, and been told how to behave in AA. And I also heard a story, and I read it someplace, that in the early days when they got flooded with all the responses to the Saturday Evening Post, that to go out on 12-step call by yourself, you had to be sober 30 days, read the big book, and worked all 12 steps. Sometimes we seem to complicate this program. We go out with 20 years and telling the guy how wonderful 20 years of sobriety is, and he's wondering, how do I stay sober tomorrow? Sometimes we need to take those newcomers out with us and see, because he isn't interested. If I tell him I got 31 years, he thinks I'm lying or I never was an alcoholic. By the way, I think that's my phone beeping back there. So we need to go back there. I'll quit. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave. Barb.
Hi, my name is Barb. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
Barb. Hi, everybody. Well, I'd like to share with you my spiritual experience I've been carrying in my heart now for 32 years. My sobriety birthday is February 18, 1984. I was in AA for 30 days when I went to Puget Sound Hospital for my alcoholism. The morning I left for treatment, I had hit my daughter pretty hard and knocked her to the floor. I was feeling horrible for hitting my daughter. I placed her in a school teacher's home for the 3 weeks I was in treatment. I had a person from my church come and stay with my two boys in my home. I was scared going to treatment. The first day in group therapy, the counselor told us She had emptied her gun into her husband in an alcoholic rage and killed him. She served prison time. I was shocked hearing this. One of the women in the group ran from the room. After she was gone, the counselor told us her baby had died of fetal alcohol syndrome, and the woman was in lockdown and could not go to her baby's funeral that day. I was shocked again and decided right then I did not belong in treatment. I wasn't that bad, but what I had done was bad enough. Then the counselor asked us to bow our heads in a moment of silence. We did, and then I had a vision. In my vision, I was standing with my daughter, and my God, as I understand him, appeared. My spiritual being, I named Jesus, with long brown hair, long brown beard, and wearing bright white robe, and he had bright blue eyes, loving eyes. He put his arm around us both, and standing in between us, he told us we were loved unconditionally, and I was forgiven. I cried. I felt a great love, and a great love for my daughter, too. Jesus' love had healed our hurt. After the moments of silence went by, the counselor asked me why I was crying. I could not tell her of my vision because it was too personal. And now I'm telling you. She told me I was crying and grieving over the loss of my best friend, the alcohol. This touched my heart too. I decided then and there I needed help and I would stay in treatment. In the vision, there was a spirit of unity and a great peace. Later that week, I presented my written first step to my counselor and the group. It was rejected. I was asked to go back to my hospital room and rewrite it. I presented it again to my counselor and the group accepted it, but the counselor did not. I was asked to rewrite it, and I rewrote it again. I presented it to my counselor and the group, and the counselor and the group accepted it. I then felt like I belonged, and I was accepted. I felt a unity with the group and the counselor. I also felt that my denial for my alcoholism was broken. Treatment had saved my life. Out of treatment, I immediately went back to AA and have been going there ever since. I had come home. 32 years now, 5 meetings a week. I am happy and serene. AA has saved my life. Thank God for tradition, too. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. The spirit of unity, the sense of belonging in AA has kept me in AA for 32 years. I thank God for all my spiritual experiences. Thank you for listening to me speak.
Thank you, Barb. Jeff.
Jeff Logan, and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 5th, 1983. I went to my first meeting with Alcoholics Anonymous in 1979, so it took me about 5 years to get the plug in the jug, mainly because I wouldn't listen to you guys. I thought I'd find an easier, softer way. I didn't know this was it. Unity. I thought unity was my buddies. I was born and raised in Redneck, Montana, and I thought unity was my drinking buddies back there, you know, since about sixth grade. And I found out at the end when I was all alone that there was no unity with those guys. So there's become unity in here, and I found that I didn't burn any bridges when I was drinking. I blew them up. And my amends have never turned out too good. About 90% of them were, you know, we don't want to see you again. And that was including my family. So you guys are my family today, pretty much, about 99% of it. And that's unity for me. For the newcomers, you know, you'll find unity in here, whether it's one person or a dozen or whatever. And one experience I had that stuck out in my mind, it came to me yesterday. 7 or 8 years ago, I had an accident in my shop, and I was burned, and I spent some time in the Harborview burn unit. And every day, there'd be 2, 3, 4 people come up and see me, you know. And one Sunday afternoon, there was about, I think there was about 6 or 8 people in there. And my roommate, he was from Spokane, he got burned real bad in a logging accident, his ears had melted off and everything, and that guy was a mess, but we'd become pretty good friends. Anyway, there were 6 or 8 people in that room, mostly AA people, and this friend of mine, Cheryl, from my old home group at Old Renton, we had poker parties together, her and I. We used to have AA poker parties. Anyway, she showed up. She had this long, old Chevy extended van. And including her, she brought 11 people up there. And they come marching in that room, and that roommate of mine said, "My God, how many friends have you got?" You know, he couldn't believe it. But that's the unity. I didn't know them people were coming. You know, I was laying there in pain and feeling sorry for myself, and all these people show up, and I didn't invite them. I didn't even know they'd be there. It was crazy. But when he said that, I thought, man, you know, I got friends I don't even know I have. You know, it was just a great feeling. So that's unity for me. People will be there when you don't even want them to. You know, it's just, and it'll be that way when you decide maybe you get thirsty and you want to pick up a drink. You know, I've had that happen. I was driving to a bar one time. During that 5 years I was in and out, and this gal had the intersection blocked. I could not get around her. I'm only about a block from the bar, but she was a counselor at the Problem Drinking Center there in my hometown, and I mean, we'd be in the meetings together and stuff, and her battery was dead, and I could not get around that big old station wagon of hers, and that kept me from going to the bar. It's just the unity thing, this thing for me, it's very strong. It's like I said, it's family. God, it's family. That's what it's about for me. I can't do this thing alone. I tried it for too damn long, and it just didn't work. So I thank God for all my friends in this program, I'll tell you, and I've really got some, too. Before my parents died, they met some of them. And, you know, and I have 2 older sisters. I didn't have any brothers, but 3 or 4 of the guys that my dad met out here in Seattle when he came out to visit me, he'd always say, "That's the brother you never had." You know, he couldn't believe the friendships I had made from where I had come from, because I had nobody when I got here. You know, when I pick up a quart of Tanqueray gin, I turn into an animal, and it's usually for weeks at a time. And I was a spot drinker. You know, I wake up in different states all the damn time. I just I didn't know what to do. It was crazy. And now I'm living a pretty good life. I enjoy things, and I haven't had a drink for quite a while. And that's immaterial to me. It's quality, not quantity, in my eyes. So. I'm glad to be here. I really am. Thank you.
Wow. Thanks, Jeff. Our next is Maggie.
My name's Maggie, and I'm an addict and an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is April 16th, 1983. And my home group is Women Into Action here in Tacoma. We meet at 7 o'clock on Monday night. You know, okay, here's what I've been thinking about the most, about unity. And it's about looking back, when I first came in, there were, well, now see, I don't know if they were old-timers. I thought they were old-timers because they were older than me, and I thought they had lots of time. You know, maybe they had 6 months. I mean, I don't know, you know, but I thought they were old-timers. But how kind they were to me. Of course, I realize now, and I wasn't aware of anything back then, but when we first come in, this is, even though this place felt so much safer than every place else, this was a really scary place to be. Everything was changing. And I was the princess of putting my foot in my mouth on all kinds of things. Well, I went through one time when I tried to get thrown out of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you guys wouldn't throw me out no matter what I said. And I didn't matter what I said, everybody would smile and say, "Oh, keep coming back, Maggie." I just, God, I got so pissed. But you wouldn't throw me out. But early on, here's some kindnesses I remember. And they were, I don't know if it was the same guy Monday night at Trusted Servants in Sumner, or if it was a different guy, because it was just, to me, it was some old guy, which meant he must have been 45 or 50 or something. I mean, you know, not talking old. But anyway, I did think he knew everything. And one of the things he did after I probably wasn't even sober yet. I mean, every time I came, I thought that that was the last time I was, but then I drank again, and then I drank again. But anyway, so one night after the meeting, because I helped clean up, because I was going to, like, get a promotion and be a trusted servant, you know, and do all that. So I was always helping somebody stack the chairs. And I asked this guy, he says, okay, here's a question. What is this thing that you do in the beginning of the meeting where you read this and you read that and you go on and you go on and you go on? And he could have said, you know, all kinds of smart-ass stuff. And what he said was, he said, okay, now here's the reason why we do that. We do that to give you time to get your coffee and get it fixed just the way you like it and get sat down and get your dollar out and get your big book open. That's why we do all those things. And I thought, oh, well, isn't that considerate of these people? You know, isn't that nice? Give me this time, because I know I'm always running late. Give me this time to get all settled. Yeah. And another time, it was, I don't know whether it was the same guy, but there was a fellow, and if you were in those meetings way back when, you know who I'm talking about. And he seemed a little slow. And I was trying to think of a way to say retarded without saying retarded. And so I'm saying, well, this isn't he, well, do you think, can this person get any, I mean, what about, you know, and he said, oh, you're talking about so-and-so, I'll bet. And I said, well, I am. He said, well, here's what we've found in Alcoholics Anonymous. We've found that there is nobody who's too dumb to get sober. There are, however, quite a few people who are too smart to get sober. Which is like, oh, yeah, yes, yes, absolutely. And what was the last one in that same thing? Uh-oh. The last one will be next year. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Maggie. Our next one is Nora?
Good morning. I'm Nora, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 5th, 1979, in Anchorage, Alaska. My first home group was the Totem Group. It was on Elmendorf Air Force Base. Can you imagine? With all the generals and the colonels and those other guys. And there were about three women in Anchorage who had worked all of their steps that we know of and that went to meetings and sponsored people. When I went out to this meeting, they used to call these women. They lived outside of the Anchorage Bowl, and they used to call these women to come into Anchorage because Nora was coming and they needed somebody to talk to me. You know, there's a sentence in the book, and I am very much like our lovely speaker last night, Rich. He had a photographic memory. Well, I do too, but it just didn't develop. So I don't have anything memorized in here, but what I do, it's at Bill's story, page 8 of the big book. And it says, no words can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in the bitter morass of self-pity. Quicksand stretched around me in all directions. I had met my match. I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master. I had other masters before I got sober. They were anybody who'd pour me a drink, anybody who share a table with me at a restaurant. I wasn't often invited to come back. You know, coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, I found that I have one master, and he's my director, and it's a higher power that I discovered in these rooms. You know, I have a good memory. It is short. I've heard many things this weekend from new people, from old people, old-timers, oh, and old people, too. And I'm one of those old people. You know, I listened to the old geezers when I walked into these rooms, and I would listen to them. My eyes would be going, oh, my God, they didn't do that. Oh, well, I'm not that bad. You know, I hear some stories now, and I keep listening, and I keep thinking, Jesus, I'm not that bad. And my dear friend, my dear new friend, Karen, said something to me last night, and she says, well, yeah, I'm not that kind of bad, or I'm not bad that way. And I realized that my bad was up in here. There's one, my description of unity and what I've discovered, but it took me a lot of 24 hours to connect the dots between the meetings, the steps, the principles. And the one thing that I found in that I have connected the dots with the unity theme this year, the tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. Look up the dictionary. What does the word common mean? It's for everybody. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news that this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. And that's all I know today. I know nothing. The more I'm sober, the less I know. Thank you very much for my sobriety.
Thank you, Nora. Now we can excuse this panel, and I will begin to read out the names.
Hello, everyone. I was just wanting to remind everyone that the Seeking Serenity and the other vendors will be buttoning up around 11:30. So if there's some things you'd like to get, I was just wanting to give that reminder. Thank you.
The next panel. Is Linda. Is Linda here? Have a seat. Is Lee here? Lee Artman? Connie here? K.L. K.M. Brian? Yeah. Cabot? We have four now. And Bill Auburn. Linda.
I'm Linda. I'm an alcoholic. And this is my birthday month, and I've been kind of running my mouth, so I kind of thought that I think my higher power probably just wanted me to shut it this morning. And I was like, huh? I mean, okay. So, yeah, I'm surprised there's a lot of people with a lot of time here. My sobriety date is February 10th of 1983, and my home group is the Above Ground women's group that meets every single, it's pretty new, but on Wednesdays at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's a closed meeting. It is wonderful. And after listening to the speaker last night, I am going to go to the next home group meeting. I hope we're going to be in town. But I want to suggest at that particular, maybe some Wednesday, we can do like a book study. Anyway, just putting that out there. And I was sitting there listening to everyone. The unity for me was my first home group. It was the old, or it was Bothell Wednesday. And for me, I got here when I was 36. My two daughters were 5 and 7. They're now, God, I can't, 40 and 38. And if I had not had that first home group and the people in that group, because I was raised Catholic and it was like, I'm going to hell, I don't care how long I'll be sober, but I'm still going to hell for all the mortal sins and blah, blah, blah. And I went to an all-girl Catholic school, high school. And recently I went to our 50th. God, what a, I mean, I just, you know, and I kind of blurted in there, what have you been doing? And I said, I'm an alcoholic and I'm sober. And, you know, and I just kind of came out. Because I don't care who knows, you know, my anonymity. It's because it kind of, I know today I'm not just nuts, you know. anyway, the unity in that home group, when they say, let us love you until you can love yourself, that absolutely happened to me. I think I cried almost every Wednesday because of the incredible guilt and remorse that I had realizing I swore I'd never be like my mother. You know, she's an alcoholic and my, you know, married several times. And I just swore I was the oldest of three and I would never do the way I grew up. That wouldn't happen. And I realized it did, and worse. And so that happened for me. They loved me until I could love myself. And that first sponsor, and I know I'm probably close, Joan, and my youngest sister that was 6 months sober, Debbie B., she took me to my first few meetings, and it was Lake City Young People's Meeting. She introduced me to Joan. She said, you talk to Joan. She's really good with new women. And that woman, because when I got here, I had the V. The V, and I was a victim of everything. And this woman, the women that I sponsor, it's not that many, but the first thing I say is I'm only a tool, and I'm only is if I don't work with my higher power, I'm screwed, because in here, I'm screwed. So she said, if you do not get a power greater than yourself, you're going to not stay sober, and you'll probably die. Or maybe, and she actually said I might slit my throat. And I thought, what an awful thing to say to this. But, and I told, ended up that first year somewhere, I did that first, you know, my fourth and did the fifth right from the book. And I told that woman stuff I'd never told another human being. And I am free today. My husband and I have been married 27 years. And that's like, and I did stay out of relationships that first year. I was too sick. And I needed to have a relationship with me and my two daughters. So, and we have 9 grandkids, and one of the other greatest gifts that I have is I'm a grandma, and those two daughters, I get to give back, you know, I had those living amends, but I get to give back the amends of being, I'm a good grandma, and the youngest, she's 3, and we take care of her every Tuesday, Peyton, and if she said, jump, grandma, and grandpa would jump too, right along with me. Oh, thank you so very much. I am so very, very blessed to be an alcoholic. I believe that, and God gave me the gift of sobriety, and I heard a speaker, and I just loved it. It was like my gift back to my God is how I handle that precious gift. And I just turned 69 last month, and it's like, yes, you know, I am so very blessed. And we got Peyton Tuesday, and my daughter that's 38, she has me cooking twice a week afterward. And it's like, it's okay, I choose to do it. And the daughter in Alaska, and I was blown away when, we heard Julie was going to, how did that happen? Ketchikan, because we were in Ketchikan for 8 years, and the daughter is still there with my two grandsons and her husband. And thank you, God. To say God, 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 that guy Friday, it was like God, it's all, yeah.
Thank you, Linda. I'm glad I'm not the only one. The next is KL.
My name is Kay. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. Yeah. My sobriety date is October 21st, 1981, and Meeker Fellowship is my home. And I have a special love in those meetings, and it's a woman's meeting at 9 o'clock on Saturdays. It's a real healthy meeting, and I'm really excited about being able to go there. I learned about unity by coming to Meeker and coming to AA and coming to the different meetings that I did go to, and I saw how people kind of just were pretty much the same. You know, I don't care what group you go to, but there's going to be someone in the corner knitting, and there's going to be some usually that's me, and there's going to be someone else that relates to somebody that you already know, and it's like, here we are, we're all different people, but we're all the same. We have the same thing that holds us together, and it has nothing to do with being alcoholics. It has to do with the recovery that we want, and that's our greatest threat. There's a whole lot of alcoholics out there that can't relate to me, or I can't relate to them, but if they ask for help, I know what to do. You know, I can bring them to a meeting. And when I learned about unity, it was here in the program, and it helped me in my own family. I could take it from this and find out how to do unity, how to do being a mother, and how to do being who I am today, which is not the person that I was when I walked through the doors. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. When I first found out about AA in 1975, I didn't know what it was. I'd never heard of it before. And my drinking partner called me in the middle of the night, and she says, "Kay, you got to talk to me." And I said, "Why?" She woke me up. And she says, "Well, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm afraid I'm going to kill myself." And I said, "Why are you going to do that?" She says, "Because, Kay, I'm an alcoholic." And I says, "How can you be an alcoholic? I drink more than you, and I'm not an alcoholic. And you always know how you got home, and I never do." And I was a blackout drinker, you know. And she says, "Well, these people from A&A are coming to see me." And that's how she said it, A&A. And so I said, "Well, what are they going to do?" And she says, "Well, they're going to get me ready to go to detox." I said, "What in the heck is detox?" Probably didn't say that, but I said, "What in the hell is detox?" And they told me that it was a hospital. She says, "Well, it's like a hospital," and that's all I heard. That's all I heard. I says, "Well, then what are they going to do?" And she says, "Well, they're going to teach me how not to drink." And in all sincerity, I said, "Who wants to do that? Why would anyone not want to drink?" And it was like that came from the very bottom of my heart. I didn't understand it. I couldn't understand why somebody didn't want to drink. And that's sad, you know. And I never thought it was sad. I just thought it was a statement of fact at the time. And so I was, about 3 months later, she called and she says, "Kay, would you go to an AA meeting with me tonight?" And I says, "What for?" She says, "Well, I'm chairing my very first meeting and I need moral support." And I said, "Sure, I'll go. That's my ego talking. This drunk can go give her some support, right?" I was 3 years sober before I figured out she tried to set me up. And she's the one that got me to this program. And but it took, well, that was 76 then. And we had the same birthday. That was another story how we got together. But we were drinking buddies. And so 6 years later, I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. 5 years later, I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And she goes, why don't you go in those doors and find out what's really wrong with you instead of blaming everything on your husband and your mother and your father and your kids? And I'm going, well. And I went in there to prove that that bride wasn't right, you know, and I haven't left. And I didn't leave because I was afraid not to stay. I had to stay. I had to stay, and I lived at Meeker for... It seemed like I lived there. It was every meeting that they had and in between, because the hall was always open, except right after the midnight meeting. And I went to as many meetings as I possibly could. And I had this 8-year-old kid with me. She's now 43. And Debbie, I'm not going to say another word.
Thanks, Kay. I'm not alone. And the next one is a Kay also.
Thank you. My name is Kay Masong, and I'm from the Solution Group, the Solution Group in Tumwater, Washington. And my sober date is April 4th, 1981. You know, when I think about unity, I think about, you know, we're all here for the same reason, because we drank, because we like what alcohol did to us. And when it started, not, you know, making a problem, then we got to AA. That's sort of, none of us came, I didn't come here because I thought I wanted to, you know, good thing to do today. I came to AA because I wanted to learn how to take a couple of drinks and quit. I didn't understand what AA was about, or I would never have come, because I had no plans of quitting drinking. And like I said, the effects of what alcohol did for me made me smarter, made me more friendly, gave me courage. You know, I didn't really like the taste of the first drink, but once you got the first one down, you didn't taste the rest of them, at least I didn't, and they were okay. But, you know, I would never trade any of my last 35 years for anything. You know, when I look back, there's so many things. When I first got to AA, everything was a crisis. And I had the three boys. That's a common thing that you got kids to raise. And they're 45, 43, and 41 this year. and it's like, I turn around and it's like, how can I have a 45-year-old child? That's just not possible. And then he reminds me, well, you got a 21-year-old grandson, and it's like, holy cow. You know, I don't know how I got to this point, but when I look back at my drinking, you know, if it weren't for AA, if it weren't for the fact that, you know, we all have a common solution. We develop a belief in a higher power. There is a God, and I'm not it. And the first, second, and third step. And... If we can't do that, then we don't stay sober, you know, because there were so many times in my sobriety when I look back that, you know, if I didn't have a responsibility to a group, if I wasn't a secretary or a greeter or a cup washer or whatever it was, there were times that I would never have gotten to a meeting on a weekly basis. And the importance of having a home group and supporting that home group with service was really drummed into me by my first sponsor. And Like I say, there are times in my life when I was working and raising kids and going to school, and I had to stay sober. So I was secretary of the Saturday night group there in Olympia. And like I say, if it wasn't for the responsibility of service for my home group, I wouldn't have stayed sober. I wouldn't have had a meeting, it was the only meeting I got to some weeks. And I go to far more now than I did then, but I'm really glad to be sober. I'm glad that you have this conference, and I'm looking forward to our Capital Jamboree in June. So come to our Jamboree and support us too. Thank you.
Thank you, Kay. Next one is going to be Brian.
I'm Brian, and I am an alcoholic. It's really great to be here. I love seeing the new faces and old friends. To be immersed in this fellowship, it's just the greatest thing, to spend 3 days soaking it up. And it sets the blending of time, and I'm really experiencing that. Like, all these memories come back, and I hear somebody, and it reminds me of something. I've just been thinking about photographic minds and how all the things I thought about saying today, and I'm going to be kind of interested to see what comes out of my mouth. I've been told I have a photographic mind, but I also have always been powerless over it. And that to me is very important. I never know what I'm going to remember, because I can't remember anything unless God wants me to remember it. And then the memory comes back crystal clear, 60, 70 years ago. Unbelievable. One of the things that just crossed my mind was the subject of humility, one of my favorite things. On my home group here, it says the Sermon on the Mount, which has been my home group for over 30 years, and I'm now going through a transition. It's now, I think, becoming, as Bill sees it, in Stanwood. Very interesting going through that transition. But in this Sermon on the Mount meeting, we read from Emmett Fox something that's not AA approved, but something that certainly would have been approved if they were approving literature before there was a big book. And Emmett really deals with the subject of humility. He also deals heavily with resentment. You know, he says, if you drink this poison to get back at Robespierre or the Bristol Strangler, you know who's going to get the benefit of that poison. But with humility, I remember his imagery of the meekest of men was Moses. And I see this picture in my mind of Charlton Heston playing Moses in the Ten Commandments, an old movie. Here this guy, he's standing up to the most powerful ruler on earth, saying, let my people go, and enforcing that, and parting the Red Sea. And he's the humblest of men. My life's always been that way. You know, I turn my will over, I focus on the subject at hand. I'm sitting on a pool table, I can't make a shot, I get prayerful, God's will, not mine, and those balls start doing things nobody ever saw them do before. The last time I got into a pool game where I really got to perform was just before I was getting ready to go to treatment, and this guy comes up, he's the 8-ball champion of the Pacific Northwest, and we get in this game. And I'm just mastering him, and he can't control the table. And I tell him, you know, this is not normal. Something unusual is going on. And he says, I know. God was talking to him, and I was given one last chance to experience that kind of a thrill before I got into this program. You know, I knew I was going to have to make this transition to a sober lifestyle. I didn't know how that was going to happen. I go into treatment, I'm foggy do. I've had all these inputs. I've had these wonderful men glowing who used to be pathetic drunks. And they would come up to me and they were sober and I would see them all lit up. And it was amazing. Just before I went to treatment, I had to wait until my sick leave and everything came through before I could go. I'm walking out of the old Fremont Tavern, past the old Fremont Hall, looking at those steps. It says, the elevator's broken, use the steps. They're numbered 1 through 12, the bottom ones anyway. It's a big stairway. I was in the tavern, and I was so impressed. Everybody's talking, having a good time, and nobody's talking to each other. I go up the stairs, I come in the room, sit down here at the end of the meeting, we say the Lord's Prayer, everybody's talking to each other. I was so impressed. When they said do 90 and 90, okay, I'm I'm here, you know, I'm going to do this. And how I developed the consciousness to embrace this program, to train myself in this program from the get-go, and to be able to enjoy the fruits of that effort for 35 years. It's a mystery, and it's wonderful. Thank you.
Let's see. Thank you, Brian. And the next one is Bill.
We're going to get even. You're only going to get 4 minutes. That's what you gave me. The last time you did this, you gave me 4 minutes.
My name is Bill, and I'm an alcoholic. You know, I wasn't an alcoholic until I got here. I drank a little too much, a little too often, but I wasn't like the rest of those. There was always somebody that was worse than I was, or I thought. I remember one time and this was a few years before I quit drinking. I go down to the Rainbow Cafe on a Sunday morning at 6 o'clock, and they're closed. And I'm pretty shaky because this was a Sunday morning, and so I walk down to the Pastime Tavern. And they're not quite open either. There's a guy standing in line. I'm looking around and I'm looking at them. And my thought was, if I ever get that bad, I'm going to do something about it. I could not see myself as one of these people standing in line. I was only there because the Rainbow was closed. You know, if your favorite bar was closed, you'll be standing in line at some tavern too. And I always looked at myself as being a little bit different, and I just, from there on, I drank. I was a blackout drinker, but I still wasn't bad. I can remember thinking, I know guys that drink less than I do, and they're alcoholic. Thank God I'm not. I got in a little trouble with my employer, like, Bill, you gotta come to work every day. Bill, you gotta come to work sober every day. And I'm realizing I can't do this and still go on to drink. So, you know, a lot of times I quit drinking forever and I realized that was kind of tough. So this time I had 8 years and I was gonna retire. So I quit drinking for 8 years. That was my goal. A week later, I'm walking down the hall at work, and I'm thinking, my God, I got 7 years and 51 weeks to go. But the next thought I had was, maybe I can't do it by myself. And I thought, maybe I can't. You know, I tried many times. They told me when I got here, you can't quit drinking forever. I quit drinking forever a lot of times. It just never lasted. And I decided, I decided I was going to need some help. I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous other than a friend of mine had gone to a few meetings, and he said, "You know, Bill, those damn fools don't believe in taking one drink." And I knew that was wrong. So I went to see this concert where I worked, and he said, "Well, you can go and go to a treatment center for 30 days, and you'll come out there feeling just great, and everything will be wonderful." And I thought, well, I was insulted. How could he think I was sick enough that I need to go to a hospital? What on earth was the matter with him? And then he said, "Well, maybe you'll go to Alcoholics Anonymous instead." Okay, 30 days in Alcoholics Anonymous, that sounds good to me. Anybody can do that. And here I am. And I told the guy, he was an Olympian. I told the guy, a friend of mine that I used to drink with, I think he knows something about Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll call him. And I went home. I looked his number up in the phone book. That was a Monday night. Tuesday night, I looked it up again to make sure it was okay. Wednesday night, I looked at the phone, but I didn't call him. The next Monday, I managed to call and say, "Jerry, do you know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous?" "Well, a little bit, yeah. You want to go to a meeting? I'll pick you up tomorrow night at 7:30. And that's how I got started. Turned out he'd been sober for about 4.5 years, you know. And I was he was real gung-ho, you know. I've always said that I would want to pick up somebody with about 5 years sobriety for a sponsor, because they've been here long enough to know that what's going on. They're not a bunch of old farts like me who's, you know, been here too long. They're not been here too long, but kind of, you know. Anyway, I started. my home group was Auburn because that's where my sponsor went. That's where his home group was. So I was assigned a home group, and I was told what meetings to go. I had to go to the meetings he went to because I was too scared to go to a meeting by myself. And so I had to go to meetings with him. I beg your pardon. Thank you very much.
I want to thank the panel, and we'll vacate here, and I'll read off a few names.